Blog Talk Radio.
Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Well, welcome to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules, talking to you from beautiful Southern California. Well, I look out the window and I see people walking down the street. It's clearly apparent that they are enjoying everything around them without any regards to what the news media calls an ongoing crisis. Well, yes, after all the rain, everything looks green and refreshed, which really reflects to me that everything is quite perfect in my world. Cars are going by, kids are on their skateboards laughing and joking with each other. Everything is absolutely wonderful out there, and the real reality of life is shining through. So my question to you today is this: what window are you looking out of? Are you looking out of a window that causes you fear or tension? Well, I just want to remind you that you can change that window to reflect a far happier reality whenever you choose to. The choice to live in happiness or the choice to live with stress and anxiety is all yours. But if you decide you want more out of life, then just keep tuning in to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio on the Law of Attraction Radio Network and see that window fill up with all kinds of love and appreciation for everything we have right now. Because this is where we learn to appreciate where we are at any given moment in time, as we become sponges ready to soak our minds with new positive thoughts and possibilities and all kinds of opportunities. Tonight we are talking about the great field, Soul at Play in a Conscious Universe, with author John James, PhD. Dr. James is a transpersonal psychologist and architect for over 20 years, in which he presents an elegant and sometimes startling conclusions about the established scientific wisdom of biology and astronomy. He shows that energy from the great field and that energetic part of us that connects with the universe, that we also call the soul, is a powerful creator factor, just as the DNA is for our physical and psychic development. So stay tuned as we reach outside our immediate surroundings and into the cosmos with John James. Welcome, Dr. James, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Very glad to be here.
And we're very glad you're taking the time to call us directly from Australia. Let's start off with your book title. Why did you name it The Great Field?
In some way, we need to describe the everything that is everything. And I can't use a word like God, and I can't use a word like cosmos. They've all got rather more different meanings. The great field is the energy foundation of the world and every world, every universe. So that this is a free-flowing, moving formlessness out of which everything that we have and use and see and experience, out of which all of these things are created. So instead of calling it a field, there's a field of energy within you, within me, between us at this moment, I needed some phrase that encompassed all fields. And that's why I called it The Great Field.
And then the rest of the title is Soul at Play in a Conscious Universe. So as a psychotherapist, how did you even get into the realm of soul?
Whatever personal work you've done in looking into who you are, you get quite quickly through dealing with behavioral problems, getting angry, being jealous, all of those things. And you begin to look a bit deeper. what is it in you that is unique? What makes you who you are? And then you begin to realize that these things are to do with energy. They're not to do with behavior as such, but energy. The psyche is energy. And then you look a bit further, and you realize that this is something that has been around a lot longer than you have. And that's when I became interested in soul. And then I began to experience my soul, and then I began to experience other people's souls. So it was out of this growing work in psychology of understanding people and working with them at their deepest, most intimate nature, that I came to know intimately the nature of the soul. But then, the more we worked with people, the more we came to understand what soul is. It's not what you find in any religious textbook. Religions will tell you that soul comes here once, or the soul has certain qualities that are different in male and female. That's as far as we can see in working with people in their souls and letting them tell us. We believe that's hokum, that souls have very specific qualities, but they are not what most of the religions say they are.
Okay, so you just stated that religions do not have the definition of the soul accurate. So what is the soul? What does it mean?
The soul is the great creator of us as individuals. The soul is present before birth, it's present during the birth, and of course it's present all through our lives. If we've had terrible traumas, and we then tend to drop away from soul, even reject it, it's too difficult. You know, we've all had experiences in our lives that are deeply traumatic, and I remember some of my own in which I actually stopped being connected with my soul. I could feel it happening, and going back in memory, I knew that's what happened to me. For example, I was four, and I burst into my parents' bedroom full of passion about something and found them making love. I didn't really understand what that was about, but my mother was quite mad with the fact that I had intruded on her and literally dashed forward naked and threw me out of the room and slammed the door shut. Now, my experience was seeing her rushing at me, hair in all directions, picking me up, throwing me out the room, shutting the door, whereas I'd come in for a passion of love. And I sat on the floor and cried, and I remember at that moment something huge, ineffable, very sweet, very beautiful inside me simply slipped away. Not totally, but some connection between myself and my soul disappeared at that moment.
Okay, I can see a loss of connection to a universal source or universal power because of a traumatic event. Does that mean is that connection to God, that soul? What does, I'm still not getting what the soul is.
Put it another way. Every time we're attracted to somebody, we walk into a room, we see somebody there, and we feel an attraction. We call it chemical, but it's also a soul connection. Because something in their energy resonates with my energy. And together our two energies have a recognition. So we go and we talk to each other, we enjoy each other. It's my personal energy and that other person's personal energy that do this actual interaction. This is what soul is. Soul is the higher form of an individual.
Oh, I see.
It lies somewhere between us and God, and between God and the great field. It lies somewhere in that great field, which is the whole of us. It's a lesser form than higher beings, and it's a higher form than us on this plane. So, souls, the other thing we discovered, and of course this is not new, most non-Christian religions will believe this to be true. Souls do not die when we die. Souls continue into the next life. So whatever we do in this life becomes part of the energetic form of the soul. And then the soul comes into the next life carrying part of that energy field. So that then creates us in the next life, and we then create our lives in terms of that field. For example, if in a life I had been abandoned, then I could come into a new life with a powerful energy of abandonment, and I could set up one event after another where I was abandoned. And then I would go through my life being a victim of abandonment. But in fact, I'm the manifestor, I'm the creator of my own life's journey. When you talk about attractions between people, you're not talking about victims. You're talking about something which is a integration of people's willingness and intent and love and attraction. I'm sure you'd agree with me there.
Absolutely.
And it's the soul that plays the major part in doing this. So what I tried to do in the great field was set up the scientific basis for this. Experiments over the last 100 and so many years that provide the foundation for us understanding that the world is made of energy. And that if we understand its energetic basis, then everything else becomes easier and clearer. For example, I find most people seem to believe that they are pushed around by events, that they're victims. But in fact, our energy field is creating everything around us all the time. So we have set ourselves up then to be victims of events. I'll give you an example. This is a very early experiment. We're going back to a bit before 1920. And a man called Heisenberg, he did some experiments with atoms. And he discovered that the atom changed the way it went, changed its direction, and even its charge, if it was observed. The observing of an atom changed it. He didn't touch it. He didn't breathe on it or anything like that. He just observed it. And he didn't observe it directly. He observed it through what they call a vapor cloud chamber. So the particles left certain patterns. Now, what he proved was that the act of observation changed reality. Now, right here at the molecular level, 100 years ago, it's shown that anything we do changes our environment. We are making the changes.
Anything that we do physically?
Or in thought.
Or in thought.
In any way at all. Any action, any vibration, emanation from us changes our set and our setting. And this point just has not got through. It's so important. It's one observation, and of course a huge amount of science is now built on this observation, but it was that whatever we do, we can't know the truth, but we're creating it.
Whoa. Okay, let's back up here. We can't know the truth.
No, we can't. Because what is true? True is something that's happening when we're not changing it. But if we're in there, thinking about it, pushing it round, even dreaming about it, it's changing. So what are we going to know? What we're really going to know is something that's already passed. That's not very clever. What we cannot know is this very moment, because it is so changing and magical. So what is truth? We can have an agreement on certain levels of truth, but some truths we will agree with us are okay. You know, the sun goes round the earth.
Right.
We can agree on those, maybe. But beyond that, looking really at the minutiae of things, when you woke up this morning, and I presume it's afternoon in your country.
Yes, it's afternoon.
And it's tomorrow here, by the way.
So that definitely means nothing is true.
Just take it a step further. We all have belief systems, and we hang on to them. And if they're very powerful, we'll hang on to them until we fight another person over them. More people have been killed on the Earth's history through people's beliefs than through anything else at all. You think about it. Wars of religion, Muslims versus Christians, the Crusades, you know, all of these things. Beliefs set us against each other more powerfully than anything at all. Now, what is a belief? It's merely something in the energy of the mind. It has no reality at all. It's just an energy. But it's an energy that we hang on to without question, and then it creates everything around us.
Because our belief is creating our reality.
Exactly. So we're creating our stuff all the time. We're not being pushed around by the wind of life. We are the wind of life.
Well, that's really interesting. I've never looked at the mechanics of the energy behind the thought before. That's very, very interesting. Dr. James, let's turn it to today's reality. With all the people and the massive fear that's going on about the economy, you would say that it's our belief that is creating this economic downturn, correct?
Yes, but I'd go back a step. I'd say that we had beliefs that the banks were infallible, that our economic gurus were wise people, whereas in fact most of them were irresponsible shysters, and they were allowed by your government to lend money without an asset backing. Normally a bank has to have a seventh or a tenth of what it lends in assets. So banks could lend infinite amounts of money without any asset backing. The result was something like $8 to $9 trillion floating around the world without any foundation at all. Now, the moment you pulled out one plug, the whole thing is collapsing. But it's because we believed that these gurus were actually substantial. And in fact, they were playing with an illusion, the illusion that they had wealth. Actually produced money in some people's pockets, and they then went and spent it. But the whole world is suffering.
Okay, so what about mass consciousness? Now, here we are, law of attraction followers, and we choose to believe that the economy is not bad and that we're really not going to be affected by it. Because this is our belief, can we then change our reality?
I'd say yes and no. If everybody in the world had this belief, you'd have enough energy to make some changes. But most people are caught up in the feeling of despair because they've lost their money. My friends here, for example, many of whom are retiring, and they see 50, 60% of their wealth has simply disappeared. Now, to say to them, all right, let's all come here and change our belief pattern, is difficult because they're suffering because their belief in their wealth has been dissipated. You've got one belief to put against another. So if we all work really hard to change the belief about our future, that we're now going to resolve the financial crisis, in fact, underneath that, we have another belief that we've just been hurt.
So you're saying our underlying beliefs will still sabotage our positive beliefs.
And we may outwardly say, yes, yes, I will come, I'll meditate with you, I'll do these exercises, and yes, certainly we'll be very positive. But then you can just scratch the surface a bit. I do a lot of work with climate change, and I find the same thing. People will say, Yep, come on, we'll all do something together to see if we can't improve things. Then you scratch a little bit. You say, how much will you do? How strong is your belief? How total is it? And underneath you begin to find despair or being overwhelmed or something like that. And that negative cancels a lot of the value of the positive, but it's unconscious. It's something I spent quite a bit of time with in the great field, is looking at the impact of the shadow. This is Jung's word for it, but the negative side of consciousness, the hidden side, and what that does in the field. It's really important. There's a wonderful, wonderful phrase of Van der Post, South African writer. He wrote, if everyone in the world would deal with their shadow, that is, those parts of them that they hide, then there wouldn't be any wars. And equally, there wouldn't be a financial crisis.
Because you wouldn't be canceling each thought out.
Can I say something else about it? In therapy, what stops us succeeding is a deep belief that we can't, or we'll be punished if we do, or we'll be disliked by our friends if we become successful, and those things. There's always a negative somewhere that prevents us getting the positive. It's like yin and yang. The two work in balance together. But one has to be hidden. This is the nature of things. Every cell has two ways of being. It can open itself and be positive, or it can close itself and be negative. This is what cells do. They go in or out. Our body does the same. Our blood vessels do the same. They pump in, they pump out. And the tendency is for one side to be judged and put aside. So, for example, I want to be a great man. I want to stand on top of a pinnacle and have my sculpture put in the middle of the town square. On the other hand, I don't want to be criticized for having too big a nose. Now, I think it's silly that anyone should judge my nose. So I suppress that. So I pretend that I really, totally want to have my statue in the main square. But because I have a hidden feeling about my nose and your opinion about it, it's never going to happen.
I see.
Now, the moment I recognize my opinion about other people's opinions, about their opinion of my nose, you can follow that bit of tortuous logic. The moment I admit that's true and really face it, then things become a lot easier. Probably, I won't bother about the statue. The statue becomes a sort of compensation for my opinion about your opinion. Human beings are complex. They're called reiterative. It's a wonderful word. We go back on ourselves in issue after issue. So we look at the nose. And when I was a kid, people poked fun at my nose, we'll say. And to compensate for that, I stood taller. People noticed my height rather than my nose, but I was still afraid of what they thought about my nose. But I wanted to stand taller, and in time being taller meant I wanted to be the tallest of all on a pedestal. And then, because that grew inside me, the nose issue gets bigger. This is what's not recognized. But if you have a pairing in two opposites, and one gets more energy, the other one tags along and hangs onto the coattails. So the shadow gets stronger in step with the positive energy. We think one will swamp the other or overcome the other. It's not true. The more effort I put into being positive, if I haven't dealt with the shadow becomes greater. They're simply friends. And this is why yin and yang are part of the whole pattern of the universe.
Wow, that is very interesting.
So the great field actually sets this up from the beginning. The great field establishes that everything will work in opposites and will be balanced as opposites to each other.
So in other words, all of our positive thoughts are being tagged by our negative thoughts and may keep on coming along with the positive thoughts. That is so very interesting. And that's what your transformational psychology is all about, huh?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then we deal with it.
So then you get down to, as they say, the real nitty-gritty of the beliefs. And then you talk about the soul. So I'm assuming that the process of relieving all of those detrimental and negative beliefs are done through the connection to the soul. Is that correct?
Yes, please. Yes. You can't divide them. We have a set of workshops that are starting in a few weeks' time, a series of them called Embracing the Gold. And it's to help people go through their negatives so they can really lead a spiritual life. It sounds simple. It's one of intent. If people clearly see their negative, and then if we go back with them to support them to understand in themselves, this is their own self-discovery, what in them created that negative, then you can actually disturb the whole imbalance inside the psyche and bring it back to a balanced position. You see? And then one of the things that happens is you put less energy into the negative, and then you have less energy into the positive. You become much more balanced and easy. But it means when you really deeply desire something, it's much more likely to happen because you're not standing in your own way.
Well, I think you just gave the fundamental reason why people who study the law of attraction and try to use it to their benefit keep on stumbling and falling, because they're not getting down to the core issues.
You've got it. That's exactly it. This is what the great field's about.
So let's go back to when you were age 4 and you had that traumatizing event. How did that manifest in your life later?
Life became less magical, less numinous. I mean, we've all had moments where we've looked at a fire, for example, and seen the entire world in the flames of the fire and felt at one with the fire, that sort of mystic oneness. It could be any sort of event. It could be a cloud swimming. It could be anything at all. But we've all had that experience. And I think when you're very young, you have that experience a great deal. But what trauma does, it hastens the process of growing up so that you lose that sense of oneness, the beautiful sense that everything is in order. You look at a little 1-year-old. Everything's okay. Everything's wonderful, in fact. Smiling, happy. By the time they're 6 or 7, they've been told to shut up, be quiet, restrict themselves, sit up straight. You know, they've stopped being who they are and are becoming more and more what their parents are creating them to be. So you actually lose that quality. And you lose a certain connection with the soul when that happens. And it's really important for our civilization that we reconnect it. We're a very material civilization. Everything's expressed in terms of what we own. We're bombarded with advertisements to own things, whereas things are really unimportant compared to our attitude. And I think this is one reason why people are so devastated with the financial crisis, because they've lived their life in terms of things. We just had here the worst bushfires we've ever had in this country.
Oh, yes, all those terrible fires we've been hearing about in Australia.
Yeah, probably 300, maybe more people have been burnt to death. I mean, the shock is huge. And at the same time, in the north of our country, half the state of Queensland is underwater with floods. Some people are so cut off that it's going to be 6 weeks before they can get out of their houses. The two countries, it's like we have two countries here. One underwater, one under fire. Well, outside what brought that about is global warming, which takes ordinary events and intensifies them. So we're going to have fires during the summer, that's normal. But to have a fire of this intensity has hardly ever happened. So global warming makes it worse. I mean, you've had the same in California.
Oh, yes.
You've had horrendous fires there just because the heat is greater and the drought's greater. And in a sense, this is what I'm talking about with yin and yang. The intensity of those things creates a very intense reaction. I mean, I bet if you looked at your feelings right now, you'd be feeling a combination of sorrow and despair. It's had a reaction which goes beyond the fact. The fact of it is just, I mean, you weren't there, you just heard about it, but it's creating in you a mood. The mood is energy. The energy then directs the way we are. It's like the dreams. They direct the way we're going to be the next day. And that is, if we just understand that the way in which we are as human beings is created by the fact that everything is energy rather than material facts, we'll get over this problem. And the financial crisis won't be so much a crisis as simply a change in the way things are. I know this may sound a bit callous, but we've all lost money out of this thing. And losing money is not the most important thing. The most important thing is how we take it and how we live with it.
How we react to it.
Yeah. And the world is still beautiful. Our friends are still beautiful. Our ability to be who we are is still unchanged and unharmed. Unless we've defined ourselves by our car, our house, a number of possessions, then it's awful.
Oh, yes, I would have to say that keeping up with the Joneses is now passé. But really, it's all about us getting down to the basics and realizing that there's well-being all around us, regardless of the material items, the lack or the abundance of it.
Yeah, and that's a spiritual journey.
So we're all on a spiritual journey, whether we want to be or not. Some of us are being dragged along, kicking and screaming.
This is it, and this is the heresy. This is the real heresy, I reckon. Because if I think about this, Julie, I'm very glad at this level that we have this economic crisis. I think that we need to reassess the whole attitude we have to material things. Now, this is okay for me to say, you know, I have a roof over my head, and many people haven't. And some people have lost a great deal, and some people are in real suffering about it. But if we look at society as a whole, somewhere what has been lost needs to come back. And I would say that from the global point of view, if we ask, why do we have global warming? Why do we have the threat to this planet and our life and our civilization? And it's primarily because we consume too much. Just think about it. If we didn't buy as many goods, we wouldn't have as many factories. And then we wouldn't be putting so much pollution into the sky. And then we wouldn't be threatening our species. It comes back to consumption. If we consume less, or, which would be the lovely one, be able to make things without the pollution that comes from it, we just make things in a sustainable way, which we don't do. If we could do that, that'd be fine. But that in itself is a major revolution. Personally, speaking here from Australia, in the midst of fires and floods and all of that, I am delighted that we are being forced to consume less, because it actually means the Chinese will be making less and putting less CO2 into the air. You'll be consuming less and demanding less goods. There'll be less ships floating across the sea, adding their pollution. The threat to the planet will be less. But it's got an upside. Is that too heretical?
No, actually, I agree with you, and that there is always an upside to what we're perceiving to be the downside. But having said that, there was a time when on the show we did a massive collective consciousness meditation in which we focused, all the listeners and I focused on the Australian outback during the 4-year drought. And our intention was to bring about rain. Well, we had the meditation, and within 27 hours, the first raindrops were felt in over 4 years. So that tells me that the energy that this group of perhaps 1,000 people at that time got together and just meditated was powerful enough to change the weather pattern so that our energy can actually affect the future, our reality.
And I believe this. I know this happens. You've actually breached that sort of minimal number you need to make a change of that nature. And this is what I'm talking about. Energy creates the universe. Your energy changed the world.
So I would assume, because we really didn't know what the outcome could be, we had no beliefs one way or the other. I'm assuming that's how it worked.
And I think there were 1,000 of you, and you sort of canceled out each other's doubts. And you just had a really good time, and you loved doing it. And your meditation came out of that positive energy field. Beautiful.
So if we got a group of people together, and we decided to meditate, and we wanted to change the reality away from this ongoing financial crisis, and we wanted to change the global warming, and we wanted to bring peace to the world, we could do all that. We could prove it. I mean, we already proved it. But here's the question. Would we be cheating people out of the real lesson that perhaps they are supposed to be learning? Would we be cheating ourselves out of a valuable learning lesson that can make the rest of our lives so much more happier, so much more joyous?
Well, that's the moral question. None of us know that, but we do all do what we do. But it took 1,000 of you to create a cloud. It might take a few more to do something about finance and global warming. But yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
Go for it if we don't cancel each other out.
Giving us some rain didn't raise negative issues. But actually saying, well, if we get rid of global warming, it means we're not going to have an industrial society. That would bring up a few negatives, because people like their television. So you need to deal with them first, which would be really interesting. We have a process which we call owning the no. So somebody comes to do a course with us, and it might be a 12-month course. And the very first thing we do is we get them to work through their resistance for doing the course, why they don't want to do it. We do it right at the beginning, first thing. Then that's out of the road. And some people might want to leave, because that no might be too powerful. But if you don't deal with that, it will be surfacing all the time the course is on. And you're having to deal with all sorts of surreptitious stuff in the process.
Very interesting. Let's move on to this really common subject in the law of attraction, and that's one that we mentioned earlier about being a victim. We have a hard time not taking responsibility for our actions. And I'm just curious, when does that start? I mean, why is it that it's such a hard concept for us to grasp, for us to actually take responsibility for our own actions as well as our thoughts?
Well, this may sound a bit trite, but think what you felt when you were, say, 5 or 6, and you just loved going down to the creek and playing and lying in the sun, and you were told you had to go to school. How did you feel?
Well, I felt cheated that I had to give up what I wanted to do and go to school.
You were victimized by somebody more powerful than you.
Yes, in better terms, that would mean a strict mother.
So multiply that by a million, all the things that happen when we're younger.
So that means all of us will experience being a victim in our childhood. So what keeps us from moving beyond that experience?
A lot of us fight it. A lot of us find it has an advantage. Now, if it's got a benefit or a pleasure being a victim, you know, you whinge and cry and mummy will come and pick you up. Oh, whinging and crying has a benefit to it. I can do it again. We play games. Some of the games make us more of a victim. And so we go through life looking for somebody to be a perpetrator, one level or another. And others of us say, well, damn that, I'm not going to hassle down to this. I'm going to do it my way. If I've got to go to school, then I'll do it on my terms. And so we go beyond it.
Okay, so what you're saying is those of us who found the benefit of being a victim have a hard time of getting out of that mindset.
I find this in therapy, that once you find the pleasure, benefit, then you've got the key to changing something. It's not about changing behavior or learning new rules and all that sort of thing. It's about actually recognizing, aha, I enjoy that. Why does somebody who is the victim of an abuser call for help and then, when they've been looked after, go back to the abuser or find another one just like them? Deep down, there's a benefit. Benefit could be habit. It could be something pretty ignoble. You know you're, in fact, hurting the other person by allowing them to victimize you. You know, there's all sorts of funny little hidden games that go on inside the mind we don't admit to. And getting at the victim means we need to be very truthful about those things.
Wow, you're really making me think here. It's really interesting stuff. Let me ask you a quantum physics question here. And if you can, explain it in really layman terms here so that we can all understand it. If we're energy beings and everything around us is energy, how is it that our senses are picking up those vibrations that we can instantaneously feel before words are even spoken?
Go back to basic physics for a moment. There's a very interesting experiment done by a Frenchman called Aspect. And because it raises such fundamental questions, it's been sort of sidelined. He found that he could take two particles that have a relationship. We call it being entangled. And he can shoot them off in different directions, virtually infinite distances. Then if he changes a quality in one particle, the other one will change instantaneously. Now, they're not connected. They're in different parts of the world. Well, one's in France, one's in China. Who knows? What he established, it's a very delicate experiment, but he established that a change happens. If you change the polarity of one particle, the other particle changes instantly. No time gap and no transfer of energy. I mean, these are huge things. They set aside the basic law of thermodynamics, for example. So one thing changes another purely because they began their life being entangled. So the Russians send a boat, submarine, out under the Arctic somewhere with a whole lot of little bunnies. And Mother Bunny is kept at home in Leningrad. And the captain has orders at any time that he feels like it completely random to go out there and kill a bunny, which he does. Back in Leningrad, they're monitoring Mother. Now, the cameras and so on show no change in Mother's activity at all. But instantly, one of her little children were killed, which none of the people in Leningrad knew when this was going to happen. There is a blip on the recording of the fields in Mother Rabbit. So she knows, even though she hasn't recognized it consciously and it doesn't alter her behavior, but she knows when a child was killed. So that's how intimate connections are. We're all connected with each other, absolutely intimately. And one of the aims of consciousness, raising consciousness, is to be able to be more aware of these connections as they happen between us.
So what I hear you say is that we're all connected, and that it should be our goal to feel this connection as much as possible.
We can feel it a lot of the time, but don't forget that we're an animal, and animals live their lives maximizing their resources for food and for safety. So if they've gone down this track 50 times and they know everything on the track, they're not going to be worried about the tree stump, the rock in the way. They know them. What they're looking out for is something unusual, new, and unexpected. So there's a huge amount of things happening out there all the time. So how do I actually filter what I need for survival so that I don't waste my time on what doesn't matter? So we have this very inbuilt, deep mechanism for filtering. And most of our connections with each other, we filter. Because, you know, we don't know them. I know you. I know my friends. I know my wife. I know my children. You know, most of the time, most of the things we know about each other, we can step aside, and then we can concentrate on the actual issue at hand. But if we didn't do that, like if you go into deep meditation with somebody else, particularly if there's some connection between you or some physical connection between you, you will feel much more about the other person than you would otherwise. If I sat down in therapy and come into a deep inner space of attunement with my client, I know my client much more intimately than by just talking to them. Because there's an energetic connection between us. It's very beautiful when it happens.
So you're sensing the vibration and energy.
Yeah. And the feeling and sensing the aura and all these things.
So then what you're talking about is energy psychology. Is that correct?
You could call it that, yes. Yes.
So that's really the new wave of psychology as well as healing. And this is exactly what you have written about in the great field.
Exactly. Because that is what opens the deepest healing. It's shallow healing just to talk about behavior. Because this might be just one thing like smoking. If you go to the deeper level, down to the addictive level, then you might deal with smoking and drinking. Go down to the energetic level underneath that, you might deal with the whole panoply of things that brought you into doing that from the moment you were conceived. And then you're doing healing at a true level. That's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting, especially in light of the fact that Western medicine is now beginning to recognize the field of energy and the vital role it plays in healing. And it's something that should have been looked at like 3,000 years ago. So I'm thrilled. And this is the perfect time to let everyone know how they can get a hold of you and how they can order your book. Your website is
thegreatfield.com, but my own personal site is johnjames.com.au.
And you've got everything on there, from architectural tours to everything, right?
Follow your way around, it connects. We're running a tour from Chartres Cathedral this summer down to the south of France following the sculptors. So I've got a reference to that on the website. So on the index page, it makes it a fairly complex page, but there's a lot of things on it.
So how does architectural philosophy lead you into psychology?
Because architecture teaches you about structure. And I'm interested in the way in which energy forms structures that create lives and ourselves. The psyche is a bunch of structures, and they're the most fascinating things to analyze. So when I did all my work on Gothic architecture and Gothic history over the last 35 years, I'm interested in identifying the master masons who created Gothic buildings. So I'm trying to find what lies underneath the creation of something. And architecture was a great training for this, but it's also been a great training for being a psychologist. The structure within which you behave.
Interesting. I've never put the two together, but the way you say it, it's very logical. It's fascinating.
I'm good at it. I love doing it, and it just gives me a lot of pleasure, and it makes sense.
And I heard something really interesting on another interview that you gave. Most psychologists or psychotherapists call their clients patients, whereas you prefer to call your clients friends because you connect with them on a much more personal level.
Yeah, none of them are patients.
And that's what sets you apart. As a true healer, you've set aside your ego for the benefit of the friend or the client or the patient. That is very good. So let me just remind everyone that if you'd like a copy of The Great Field, which is really a terrific scientific book that's dealing in energy psychology, go to the host page and you will see the book that you can simply click on, and that will take you directly to Amazon where you can purchase it, or go to John James' website, thegreatfield.com, and you can purchase the book there. Also, in regards to his tour, he still has two spots available. So go ahead and check that out at johnjames.com.au. Thank you so much for coming on with us tonight, Dr. James. We really, really enjoyed it.
You're a charmer, Julie. Delighted to have talked with you.
And that wraps us up for another tremendous week on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Thanks so much for spending time with us, and I look forward to talking with you again next Sunday. And until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now. You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio, hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.